Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this podcast topic is warfighting in the air domain, focusing on our current operational concept, multi-domain operations, as found in FM30. We welcome Colonel John Sander, Director of the Army Joint Support Team at Hurlburt Field, Florida. We also welcome CB4 Austin Kilpatrick, who works in the Airspace Control Proponent Office here at Fort Leavenworth. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we talk a lot about FM30 in our podcast because this is the Army's capstone doctrine for multi-domain operations. Today, we're going to focus specifically on the air domain and how integrated the Army is within the air domain. I'd first like to start off by defining the air domain. So JP 330 defines the air domain as, quote, the atmosphere beginning at the Earth's surface, extending to the altitude where its effects upon operations become negligible, end quote. So gentlemen, I'd like to talk about your experiences. Colonel Sander, could you share with our listeners how you have been involved in the air domain throughout your career?
So I'm a career field artilleryman, and so most of my career has been spent dealing with things that are either flying through or included into the air domain. And so that was the genesis behind the Echelons Above Brigade Airspace course as air domain started to change and we started to bring JAGIC online. I was the first director for the EBAC course down at Hurlburt before going to War College. And so had quite an experience across, not only from a field artillery perspective, but from a joint perspective in how both the Army integrates into it and then personally how the impacts have kind of shaped where I'm at in my point in this career.
Thanks.
And so for me, I started off as an air traffic controller, an enlisted air traffic controller, and then became an air traffic and airspace management warrant officer. And so my time is spent both from an air traffic control perspective, and then also I spent quite a bit of time as an airspace manager working both the division and Theater Army. And so really for me, my job has been to either keep Army aviators safe as an air traffic controller or plan and integrate, coordinate the Army's airspace requirements in the air domain at the division and theater Army levels.
Now, don't quote me on this, but I think you're only the second warrant officer that we've had on the show. So I'd like to talk a little bit, Austin, about warrant officers. You know, you're often the quiet professionals, the subject matter experts that give advice to commanders, often working behind the scenes. So could you talk a little bit more about your role as a 150 Alpha?
Yes. So 150 Alphas, or air traffic and airspace management technicians, can be found either being air traffic control platoon leaders within an air traffic services company in the Combat Aviation Brigade. We also have airspace management and airfield management personnel in the Combat Aviation Brigade currently, although the RSTRUC will change that and move those personnel to different organizations. And then, of course, you'll find us also at the division, Corps, Theater Army, Multi-Domain Task Force, and we're also in the Battlefield Coordination Detachment. So at each of those echelons, we coordinate and integrate the Army's airspace requirements on our tactical airspace integration system. Also, in the future, you may find air traffic and airspace management technicians in the brigade combat teams as part of the ATOM BA redesign. We are pushing to push 150 Alphas or airspace management professionals into those ATOM BAEs.
So just more pushing more expertise on airspace down to the lower level?
Absolutely. Providing the maneuver commanders with the capability to plan, coordinate, and integrate airspace. Right now you have Army aviators there, you have air defenders there, but you don't really have, you know, airspace-specific people besides the air traffic control NCO who does airspace coordination.
Gotcha. So, sir, you're a field artilleryman, like you just said. Austin, you're airspace SME. I'm an aviator by trade, you know, so I have operated throughout my career in the air domain every time I take off, whether it's Snap of the Earth or 10,000 feet. So we all have these experiences. So I have a two-part question. So what other Army units and assets that maybe, you know, we haven't talked about or often think about are integrated between the land and air domain? And then also kind of an AAR, maybe based on what you have seen in the news about the conflicts in UCOM or CENTCOM, do you think that the air domain is getting more congested than we saw in previous conflicts?
So we'll take the first part first. So other units that are involved in the air domain, quite frankly, every formation is involved in the air domain at this point. So we don't generally think of our infantrymen, but our mortars are in the air domain. We have UAS that are operating within the air domain. We have the ADA community operating in the air domain. Besides our aviation units, we also have space and cyber effects that happen within the air domain. And so every unit at this point has some touch or element that uses something in the air domain. And so to the second part, yes, the airspace has become much more complex. I remember as a young lieutenant, as we cleared airspace, it was stand behind the gun, look out, and make sure there was no helicopters or aircraft in front of it. And that was about how we did airspace. But in today's world, that doesn't meet the requirements to make sure that we can account for it. We're shooting further. We're shooting more often. We mass assets, whether it be from an artillery perspective, whether it be from numbers of UAS we put into the air, whether it be how we position our ADA systems, all of those create complexity. But through planning, you can take that complexity and integrate it all, and you don't have to always try to figure out a different method. You can plan most of these things to operate to facilitate the commander's plan without having to kind of break the process. And so Ukraine, UCOM, even Indo-PACOM, as you look at those theaters, they each have their own uniqueness of airspace users, but there are a lot of common processes that we can take away to facilitate that.
Yeah, and I would add, you know, talking about the airspace getting more congested, it absolutely is. Airspace, just like any other resource or the air domain, is a finite resource, right? And so we have to be stewards of that resource and ensure, you know, really that we are massing those effects, as Colonel Sandor talked about, and being able to converge effects in a place and time of our choosing on the enemy. And we do that through the air domain. And so it's very important that leaders understand how to think in the third dimension and how to employ their assets to, one, keep them safe, and also to be able to be effective. So we want to get effects to and from their, you know, destination safely, and also in a timely manner without affecting the rest of our operations. So I think being stewards of that airspace and using that resource effectively is extremely important as we start to proliferate more and more airspace users in the air domain.
I would offer specifically from the Ukraine-Russia piece, there's lots of lessons that are coming out. And I think in some ways, particularly for the airspace, we have to look at it kind of twofold. One, how are they operating? And two, is it how we would operate? And what I mean by that is, as we look at some of the lessons right now in terms of airspace, Ukraine and Russia are both using a lot of UAS as part of the process of how they're executing observation, collection, and other forms of UAS with munitions and things like that. But the broader piece is both of those are in defensive postures. And so there's some limitations on that in terms of how and when we would see that. The other piece is that both of those holistically use the big sky, little bullet theory. And so they're less worried about air collisions or losing those UAS systems. And so from our perspective, both from an Army and from the Joint Force perspective, we are much more focused on accountability of where we're putting systems into that airspace, how we're integrating them with a Joint Force, the procedural control measures that we're using to facilitate that, to account for making sure that from a risk perspective, we've eliminated as much as possible and made it as safe as possible for our human, whether it be fixed wing or rotary wing assets, that are being executed. And so there are some great lessons that are coming out. I think we just have to take them as pieces and then look at how we would fight as well before we just wholesale apply them to the, mm-hmm. the process.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you know, you may be creating a very permissive surface-to-surface fires environment, say, for the Army, right? So if we have unmanned systems and we're also doing surface-to-surface fires, that type of operations that you're seeing may be very effective. But we like to do things as multi-domain, right? And so we like to converge effects. We like to layer effects and do lots of things simultaneously to mass those effects on the enemy. And so that's a different problem set that we need to be looking at, and we have to look at this from an apples-to-apples comparison here of how we're going to bite, as Colonel Sandor said, and make sure that we are layering those effects effectively and timely.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Austin, I want to kind of go back to you mentioned leaders. So I'm going to bring in some more doctrine into the conversation. FM3O in Chapter 1 outlines understanding the operational environment, or the OE. It says that the OE considers an understanding of all the domains. And specifically about leaders, here's what FM3O says. Army leaders do not need to understand all the technical components of what the joint force does in other domains, but they do need to understand the complementary and reinforcing ways in which they can request and employ those capabilities and methods in support of land operations. So what are the big things that commanders and staffs need to understand about those complementary and reinforcing capabilities within the air domain? And perhaps maybe you could talk about some of the misconceptions that you see from commanders and staffs regarding the air domain.
So personally, one misconception that I think people often have, leaders in particular, is that the joint air tasking cycle is not permissive enough for the Army to conduct operations, right? And that's simply not true. The joint air tasking cycle provides an ability for the joint force as a whole to have an effect on the enemy in the air domain, as well as coordinate airspace requirements, right? And so it is a permissive cycle or system, and people need to understand how to, in this case, get inside the box. We like to talk a lot about out-of-the-box thinking. In this case, we need to be teaching leaders how to operate within that cycle. And so it is the most effective way that we have to date to be able to apply joint assets on a target, whether that be coordinating the airspace to do that with or whether that be coordinating the actual air asset. And so it is how we meet the joint force commander's objectives. So, you know, the output of the targeting cycle feeding into the joint air tasking cycle is how we do that, right? So when the joint force commander or the components want to provide an effect to an area or a target, they first identify that through the targeting process. And then the output of that is now the joint air tasking cycle uses that process to strike those targets and also provide a safe way for those, you know, aircraft to get to and from their target area. Sir, did you want to add anything?
So the piece I'll add first is that all commanders have an airspace management requirement. And so they have to understand how their assets are employed in the air domain. So not only do they have that requirement, part of that requirement is control of their organic assets. The only way you control it, much like we control everything else, there's measures put in place to control it. And so understanding what those measures are and the process to include those into either the unit airspace plan or into the joint airspace plan to facilitate how to employ those systems is critical. We talked about earlier a little bit, we talked about the complexity of the airspace. And so Austin talked a little bit about adding 150s down at the brigade level. Previously, it was much more aviation-centric focus in terms of planning, less about the management of airspace. And with all of the additional UAS, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 500 now UAS capabilities within a brigade, that complexity has drastically changed in terms of what a brigade commander would have to facilitate. And so there has to be an understanding that helps to facilitate that. To the second point of your question, in terms of some of the misconceptions, there's a couple out there. Divisions owning airspace is not really a thing. You are delegated a volume of airspace if you can provide to the JFAC, wearing the second hat of the Airspace Control Authority, the ability, capability, assets, and resources to control a volume of airspace. And so if you can meet the kind of the threshold to do that, then you can be delegated a volume of airspace. And then, so the Airspace Control Authority, through the Joint Force Commander, can take those that volume of airspace back at any time based off of requirements for the Joint Force. And so we are part of the airspace control element, and fall under the airspace control plan of how the Joint Force Commander wants to execute across the entire Joint Force, across the JOA, rather, sorry, to facilitate the execution. And so that JAGIC, although it is subordinate, resides in a subordinate formation, particularly as you, from a core perspective, really is part of the airspace control plan for the Joint Force Commander. And so cores and divisions that are trying to execute things in the air domain are utilizing the airspace control element that is closest to them to facilitate those operations. And so they've got a lot of other responsibilities for the Joint Force, not just what's going to happen within the division's AO in terms of that volume of airspace. And so things like aircraft that are going to execute strategic missions on behalf of the Joint Force Commander may fly through that volume of airspace. Well, if you think back to Iraq or Afghanistan, if a ground convoy was coming through multiple AOs or aviation units were flying through AOs, you checked in and checked out with the ground owner in that process. That same thing still has to occur in the air domain. And so if a fighter is going to execute missions deep for the Joint Force Commander, he's checking in with every airspace control element that he would pass through, he or she would pass through as part of that execution. And so not only does that JAGIC inside that volume of airspace worry about everything that the division's doing, but it's how do we integrate all of the rest of the Joint Forces airspace requirements inside that volume of airspace. And so it's not as simple as just saying, no, you can't come in. It's how do I integrate you to facilitate for the Joint Force Commander?
And let's, you know, some of the complexity with large-scale combat operations is also above that coordinating altitude. You've got counter-air missions happening. You've got Air Force fighters trying to fight off enemy fighters that are also occupying that same airspace. And so that adds a complexity level and a dynamic change to the way we've done business when what we've seen in counterinsurgency operations. And with that dynamic change, you need an element at the what we believe is the division as the principal warfighting, tactical warfighting echelon. You need that divisional element to be able to clear fires in the division deep to set conditions for those brigades effectively and quickly. And the only way to do that is to have a controlling element at the division that can talk directly to the controlling element that's above the coordinating altitude. So if we tried to move that requirement to the core would be quickly overwhelmed trying to clear all the fires coming out of the division AO above the coordinating altitude because they would have to do it for all divisions and potentially all brigades that are breaking the coordinating altitude as well.
Okay. And so let me go back to, because you guys threw out a lot of terms there. So the airspace control element within the division is the JAGIC.
The Joint Air Ground Integration Center, yes.
Yeah. And then coordinating altitude, could you also define that for our listeners?
Sure. It is an airspace coordinating measure, and it is the separation of controlling agencies or controlling elements, airspace control elements.
So that JAGIC has coordinating altitude, or the air domain below the coordinating altitude, and then the JFAC has, or another airspace.
Another airspace element that is part of the airspace control plan. So it could be an AWACS, it could be a CRC, it could be an adjacent unit that has a higher coordinating altitude than the one next to it. So depending on how The division has requested that volume of airspace for where that coordinating altitude is, and what was approved could drive multiple coordinating altitudes for adjacent units across the board. And so one unit could be a higher altitude based off of its requirements, could be a main effort versus a supporting effort who has a lower coordinating altitude, as an example.
Or they may also reach back to the Air Operations Center as well. But yeah, those control and reporting centers or those AWACS, which most people are familiar with, mm-hmm. are up there doing that air battle management of assets above that coordinating altitude. The thing that's unique about the JAGIC or the Joint Air Ground Integration Center is that it has an Air Support Operations Center linked to it, and they are able to talk directly to that controlling element. And that's what makes the JAGIC TTP more unique than other TTPs that we have, where we have maybe a tactical air control party that has coordination capability but not necessarily abilities to talk directly to that controlling element that's above the coordinating altitude. Mm-hmm. These are Air Force personnel that link to the Army's Army Air Ground System. So, yeah, they're nested with us at Echelon all the way down and all the way up through Theater Army with different personnel.
Sir, you were talking about divisions thinking that they own the airspace. So maybe an example from like a warfighter of where that misconception maybe caused some issues.
So I'll answer your question in a second, because I think it's larger than that. I think because we don't understand the airspace terms, simple terms like what is airspace management versus airspace control. Quite often we hear leaders use those words interchangeably in the same sentence. And so there are certain authorities and responsibilities that come with airspace control that is not part of airspace management. They fit into airspace control as part of the execution, but you don't have the authorities to change or do some of the functions that are executed as part of airspace control. And so to get to your point, most of the time, well, commanders think of particularly ground, we own that AO.
Uh-huh.
And so we relate the same term to a volume of airspace because from a division level, we've requested it, we've got it approved, and so we believe we own the ground from the boundary to boundary. We also own the airspace from the ground to that coordinating altitude. And reality is we're an airspace element that has control capabilities, that is part of an airspace control plan that facilitates use of that airspace for the joint force. And so it's kind of bending terms, but it's understanding the differences. From a doctrinal standpoint, an AO does not come with airspace. And so the request of airspace is a very separate function that has to happen. And so understanding that it's greater than just what those division requirements are plays into the term, I'll use the air quotes, of owning versus the ability to control.
Gotcha.
Well, it also has to do with the capability to command and control the assets that enter that airspace. And so your Air Support Operations Center, coupled with your Tactical Air Control Party, which are Air Force personnel residing in that division COIC, if you will, or the current operations center, that is what gives an Army division the ability to command and control those joint assets, because they come with specific radios. They come with access to the Theater Battle Management Core System, which is the Air Force's digital weapon system that they utilize to do airspace control and management. And of course, we've got specific Army capabilities sitting around that table as well, fires, Army aviation, and of course we got the Army airspace soldiers as well sitting at the table. So all of those team members coming together form that capability that is the Joint Air Ground Integration Center. And you know, the JAGIC specifically is really focused on, conducting the clearance of fires, of course, and then the integration of joint assets in that division AO. So that's really what they're designed to do.
In execution. And so that does not get away from the division or subordinate units doing the appropriate airspace planning beforehand to facilitate it. That we don't expect a COIC to execute an unknown plan. Somebody's built a plan that has been processed and set in motion, and the COIC monitors or facilitates it. The JAGIC is the same way. The plan has to be built beforehand, has to have all those things accounted for, the airspace control measures, how they made it to the airspace control order, what is actually published, what does the division need in order to execute, the frequencies in which they're going to operate on. All those other things play into that capability.
And I do want to circle back a little bit about the differences between airspace control and airspace management. And in simplest terms, all commanders have a responsibility to manage airspace and users, but not all of them have the authority to control those users in airspace. And so brigade commanders, for instance, can request through their unit airspace plan a volume of airspace that they want to use to do an operation, and then they can manage the users in time and space when they come on station to do that operation. But they don't necessarily have the authority. They have to go to the division JAGIC for that authority. And so that, like I said, in simplest terms, that authority is really what separates the two. One has the authority to do something. The other has a responsibility to still make sure that those users are safe when they enter that brigade's AO.
Thanks. Before we wrap up this episode, we've talked about the air domain. Sir, could you talk more about the Army Joint Support Team and what you provide to the Army?
Absolutely. So the Army Joint Support Team, we reside in three different locations. Hurlburt Field in Florida, here at Fort Leavenworth, and then at Nellis Air Force Base. At Hurlburt Field, we primarily do, the headquarters is located there, and then we have a part of the team that is led by Lieutenant Colonel Hastings as the commandant, and he is focused on the joint courses. And then the rest of the team, we cover down on the BCDs, the Battlefield Coordination Detachments. So we do NTTs or have them come to us to do training. We train every division JAGIC. We train the Echelons Above Airspace course and conduct it 5 times a year. And then we do specialized joint airspace training where divisions come and bring their JAGIC and their TTP. And we set them up in our battle lab and actually go through nuts to bolts of how you would execute their TTPs. We have the TBMCS, so we've got all of the joint systems. We've got all the Army command and control systems. And so it gives the division a holistic look tied in with the joint systems of how our systems integrate and talk back and forth. Out at Nellis Air Force Base, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Nash is the commandant, and their big focus is joint firepower course is the biggest course. But they also touch in the JTAC course and the ASOC IQT courses. Those classes that specifically talk about where the Army has touch points. So how does the Army operate? What is the Army? Most of the Air Force doesn't understand how we function, and so bringing that to life in those courses. And then here at Fort Leavenworth, we've got the Airspace Control Proponency Office, and they're really focused on the doctrinal piece of airspace. And so all the policy authorities, changes within airspace, that most of that goes through the Airspace Control Proponency Office. Although smaller than most proponency type offices, swing a very large stick in terms of all of the things we touch. And so integrated across multiple centers of excellence, it's not just inside of the Mission Command Center of Excellence. We touch aviation, fires, maneuver, just to name a few. From a touch point, we also have requirements with CTCs. We have requirements to the Army Air Force Integration Forums as part of the liaison capability for the Army with the Air Force. And so we have a lot of small tasks that have huge impacts across the force.
And I would like to add, too, during our specialized joint airspace training, we also train corps in the Joint Target Engagement Capability, which is a TTP. Where we teach corps how to work with their divisions, JAGIC, to clear fires for themselves as well.
So currently, we're in the process of updating FM352. It's been a few years, and there's been a lot of changes in the air domain. And currently, it is out for initial worldwide staffing, and we're looking for feedback from across the force as we look at changes within the air domain and how that impacts the Army. Things such as procedures for understanding UAS, what are some of those requirements, how does the Army integrate airspace, what is a unit airspace plan, what are some of the requirements for commanders to manage airspace. And so kind of a holistic relook across airspace, but we really need the force's input to be able to make it a quality document.
And do you have a point of contact that if anybody who's listening wants to give their input?
So you can reach back out to either Major Candace Hill at the ACPO office or Chief Kilpatrick, both at ACPO, or Rich Stanfield, or you can contact myself and we'll make sure it gets to the right places.
Yeah, and in on the global, although I do go by Austin, it is Robert A. Kilpatrick. So I just, if anybody is going to email me, it's going to be Robert A. Kilpatrick.
Well, you talked about FM352. I'd love to have you guys both back on the show again to talk more about the air domain and, you know, specifically airspace, since that's what that publication is about. So I hope to have you back on the show.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the crew and special doctrine division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Our production is coordinated by Mr. Ted Crisco, and our editing and sound is provided by 29 Pixel Studios. Please don't forget to subscribe on YouTube, Apple, Audible, or Spotify podcasts, and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.